John Constantine, a Hellblazer podcast.
Everybody and welcome back. Before we get into the episode, just want to let you know that this is the free version of the podcast, and all that means is that we are way behind where I'm at in Patreon. So if you are loving this podcast and you need more John Constantine in your life, definitely go check us out at patreon.com/planes, trains, and comic books and sign up for the Hellblazer tier, where you'll get access to the entire Hellblazer library that I've recorded so far. And also, you get access to the exclusive episodes of the Planes, Trains, and Comic Books main podcast. So if any of that sounds good to you, definitely go over to patreon.com/planes, trains, and comic books, all one word, and sign up there. And with that out of the way, let's get into the issue. Today, we are reading Hellblazer number 58. And just a little catch up on what's been going on in the last issue. Chaz was taking John to meet his uncle. And when they got there, Chaz's uncle was dead. It was all sad and everything. Chaz even asked John if his uncle's in a better place, and John lied to him and said yes. But as they're having that conversation, all of a sudden they look at the grave, and it was being robbed by three men who were trying to take the body that had just been put in there of his uncle. And they end up succeeding. These guys that stole the body bring it back to a facility where they are testing ammunition and its effects on human cadavers. So basically, they're just shooting bodies a lot. And I would think they would already know what bullets do to bodies, but they are continuing these tests, and the head doctor guy is pretty into it, and basically he just likes to see the bodies get blown up and chunks of them torn away by the bullets, and there's no real reason why they need to do these tests, but none of the other scientists know that. So Chaz and John do a bit of investigating. They find out that the bodies are taken to a facility up north, so they go up there, and they immediately get caught. And that is where we left off, with them being caught and the head scientist guy threatening to use them for live trials in these bullet testings. And that's where we left off. So first things first, we got the cover here. We see a bunch of heads of, I'm assuming, dead bodies. And John's head is right in the middle of them. But unlike the other ones that are kind of just staring forward, John is screaming out in fear. And it looks like maybe he's trapped in between these bodies. Like, there's so many of them, they're pushing in on him because he's having to worm his hands out. And it looks like he's trying to reach out, but he can't quite get his arms pushed out between the dead bodies. And we see on the cover that this is written by Garth Ennis with art by Steve Dillon. And we start off on the first page with the weird head scientist of this facility. We see his person just walking around in a void. And that's because he's daydreaming and he's taking a leisurely stroll through, I guess, the thoughts of his mind. And his narration says, "Daydreaming. I'm not in my cold, dull office anymore, confronting two irrelevant thugs and their dreary concerns. I'm in my orchards. I've grown something special here. Strange fruit that hangs rotting from invisible trees. And why? To prove a point." And the whole time that narration was going on, we were just focusing on him walking towards the reader. And in each panel, he was getting closer and closer until we got a close-up of his face. And then we get on the next page as we turn a full-page splash that zoomed out. And we see in this orchard of his, he is surrounded by the bodies of the people that he has used in his tests. So, and they all look like they've been shot up. Their arms are falling off, or they don't have arms or legs or parts of the rib cage or face. And he's just happily staring at them as they float around him. And actually, I think he said there was like invisible trees they're hanging from, maybe something that he's seeing. But yeah, they definitely look like they're hanging in midair around him. And his narration continues, but the narration is of a quote that someone had said to him at some point in his life, possibly while he was in medical school. So as he looks up and smiles at the bodies, he's thinking of the quote, "The human body is a remarkable organism, Dr. Amos. Indeed, one could go as far to say that a human life, whether in physical or spiritual terms, is a veritable miracle." And as Dr. Amos is thinking this, he goes over to one of those floating bodies, and he reaches out and he puts his hand on this cadaver's shoulder. And then his narration kind of answers or responds to the quote that he just thought, and he says, "Gentlemen, I am sorry, but I must disagree in the strongest possible terms." And as he says that, He grabs the shoulder and he begins to tear the body in half. And you see the rib cage and the innards fly all over the place. But like I said, this is all in his head. So, I mean, it's gross. But everything is tinted purple in this imaginary daydream of his. So it's not really bloody or the color of blood or actual meat. Then we cut to Dr. Amos sitting in his office, and we're right where we ended in the last issue, where John and Chaz are in this man's office and they've been taken prisoner. So I guess that daydream is what was going on in his brain while he was questioning John and Chaz. And Dr. Amos is going through Chaz's things, like his wallet, and he's taking note of Chaz's personal information. And we see that both Chaz and John look pretty angry as they give him an icy stare as he does this. And he says to Chaz, "It doesn't matter if your friend won't tell me his name, Mr. Chandler. The same goes for his admirable icy stare. This center runs ballistic tests for a private munitions firm. Human cadavers, such as your uncle's, Mr. Chandler, are obtained illegally, more cheaply and in greater numbers than official channels could ever allow. It's a simple matter of supply and demand. You gentlemen have attempted to disrupt this process without aid of any wider authority. You are alone. No one will come to your assistance." And as he says this last line, Chaz gets kind of wide-eyed because he realizes that this is a threat, of course, from the doctor. And John's face doesn't move at all. He's still just giving that same steely stare. And the doctor continues, "You will be used in trials of various weapons and bullet types to determine the effects of high and low velocity projectiles on a living body under fully controlled laboratory conditions. I am almost grateful for your cooperation in this important step forward for the field of ballistics research. Good day." And then the guards begin to escort Chaz and John out the door. And Dr. Amos is still looking at Chaz's wallet, and specifically his ID. And before Chaz completely walks out the door, Dr. Amos asks Chaz a question, saying, "Mr. Chandler, your driver's license gives your name as Frank William Chandler. Yet earlier, I heard your companion refer to you as Chaz. As your name is not Charles, I am curious as to why he shortened it in this manner. Why are you known as Chaz?" And then Chaz turns around and just answers him straight. And it seems like John is either embarrassed or annoyed at either Chaz's willingness to answer the question or the answer itself, which is kind of silly. But Chaz answers the doctor saying, "Well, it's after that bloke who managed Jimi Hendrix, isn't it? He was called Chaz Chandler, so me mates called me Chaz too, because we got the same last name. Kind of like a joke, you know what I mean?" And then Dr. Amos stares at him curiously and says, "Jimi Hendrix?" Then we get a hard cut to the cell that Constantine and Chaz are being held in. And Chaz is commenting on what just happened with the doctor in his office. And he's saying, "How could anyone go through life without hearing Purple Haze?" So the doctor had never heard of Jimi Hendrix, and this is baffling to Chaz. And John answers him, "Maybe he likes Floyd better." But Chaz is actually kind of worried about this whole situation, so he says, "John, this is serious. That nutter's gonna shoot us. He said they were off to clear the ranges. We're gonna die." And then John gives a little smile as he leans against the wall, and he says, "Nah, I can't afford to. And if I go home without you, your lovely wife's gonna cut my bollocks off." And Chaz is happy to hear this, so he says, "Thank Christ, how do we get out then?" And then John looks at him confused and says, "Out? How the bloody hell do I know?" Then we cut to some ethereal realm. I don't know exactly where we're at, but it is some place that spirits go to. Because we see the spirit of one of the cadavers that was being used in those ammunition tests is flying around amongst possibly other spirits, but it looks kind of just like an amorphous cloud that's surrounding him. And we get his narration that says, "Imagine your first glimpse of heaven. You fell off the bridge on a warm summer night, a little too drunk to make it home safe. A cold river, a dark nothing, the warm winds of eternity, and you're nearly there. You're close enough to understand." And we see that this spirit is flying around with a big smile on his face, and he looks really peaceful and serene, and the narration continues. "Mother singing you to sleep. Warm first kiss to keep out the cold. A bubbling mountain stream you could swear was just singing for you. Marijuana smoke and the song Healing of the Nation. Heaven lets the good times roll forever." And then we get a panel that is completely solid black, and it's as if whatever was just happening gets cut off from the spirit, and the spirit's narration continues. "That first glimpse of heaven was all you got. You made an old mistake." Then as we turn the page, we see the spirit is back. It's not a black panel anymore, but he's turning as if something has come up behind him, and he looks kind of wary or scared. Then we cut to the testing facility where his body is currently being used as target practice. So it's like his soul can feel what's happening to his body and he's tethered to it somehow. And then his spirit begins to be pulled down from heaven towards the ground, along with a bunch of other ones too. I'm assuming they're all spirits of people that were shot during these experiments. And the narration continues. All of a sudden, the good times aren't worth a damn. There are others caught on creation's horizon, and they can't go up or down. But you were nearly there. They've spoilt it on you. And the others can't take much more. The winds will rip them apart if they're out here much longer. So the spirit begins to fly down to the earth and eventually makes it to the facility that he's being kind of pulled to. And his narration says, there, this is where it happens. This is where they ruin paradise. And when he gets to the building, he's able to just fly through the walls because he's a spirit. And he immediately flies into the testing room and he sees what they're doing. He sees they're shooting cadavers, specifically his. And when he realizes it's his body being shot up, his narration says, this is where they've killed you forever. That's you. And look at what they've done. Look, look, look. And as his narration says that, we get a zoom in on his body. And you see his mouth blown open, like his jaw's completely torn off. And his throat has exploded from the bullets that they're using. And it seems like seeing this makes the spirit go kind of mad. And he begins flying through the halls. And he's saying, can't look. Out, out, go, go, don't stop, losing it, losing too much, can't take it, soul shredded. And there's just a bunch of panels of him flying through different parts of the hallways. And he is passing like the guards and other employees of this facility, and they're not noticing him at all. So it seems like, yeah, he's just a ghost that people can't see. So as he flies, his narration continues. What do? Nothing. Lost. Lost. Others. Others caught up there. Lynched. Up there, going to burst. Self, gone, got to try. And then he takes a turn and all of a sudden he notices something and he narrates, I smell magic. And then he beelines for a metal door and we don't know what's behind that door. But then in the next panel, we see John and Chaz in their cell and John is getting a weird feeling and he says, hey, did you feel that? And Chaz answers, what? But then Chaz does feel something and it scares the hell out of him because he says, Jesus, something just went through me. And then we see the spirit appear before them, and it looks in terrible pain. Instead of having its spiritual body that was perfect now, it has a body that looks like it's being shot up in real time as it's screaming in front of them. So its arms begin to explode, and its legs and bottom torso begin to explode, and all we can see is like vague shapes of the spirit's bone structure underneath. And like I said before, it came to this room because it felt magic, because John is here. So as it's screaming out in pain, it just gets closer and closer to John, like it's trying to ask him for help. And John is just like, oh shit. And then the screaming changes to words and the spirit says, lost hundreds, lost, caught outside heaven, nailed to the sky. This place did it, crucified them there, left them to finish forever, losing, ripping, shredding, going forever. And like I said before, as he's yelling this, his body is slowly being torn apart, like I said, as if it was in real time being shot up. And as the last bit of flesh leaves his ethereal skeleton, John realizes what's about to happen, and he yells to Chaz, cover your eyes, get down! And then they both look away as the spirit's body explodes in a flash of bright white light. And as Chaz turns around, he sees the only thing that's left of this spirit is a small smoking pile of ash. And Chaz says, what? What was? But John cuts him off answering, saying, a dead soul. But it said there's more. All stuck, all gonna burst in the winds. And Chaz asks, stuck? And John answers, this place. They're desecrating the bodies, and it's buggering up the souls. They can't get into the afterlife. They're stuck. And they'll be wiped out. And then upon hearing this, Chaz gets very angry. And we got a really cool set of panels here where we see Chaz's angry face on one side and John's face realizing that he has just told Chaz that his uncle is not okay. And we get a repeat from last issue of Chaz asking John what's going to happen to his uncle. And it says, I need to ask you something. You know about all this stuff, don't you? I mean, you know the truth. Not that bollocks the vicars and all tell us. Is my uncle Tom in a better place? And you hear John's answer, of course he is, mate. And this is the moment that John realizes he's a son of a bitch for telling Chaz that and lying about it. And Chaz realizing that John did lie to him about where his uncle went. So John, feeling guilty, says, shit, look, mate,
I'm sorry. I didn't know. But we can maybe save him, right? I need that knife you carry in your shoe.
And Chaz gets the knife, but he doesn't hand it to John. He just throws it at John's feet. So John opens the knife, and he begins to do some carving on the wall, and he looks like he's making a circle, and Chaz is asking, what are you doing? And John replies, letting him back in. And as John finishes the circle, he then stabs the knife into his hand and makes a pretty big cut on his palm, and then he takes his palm and begins to rub some kind of symbol into the wall in the middle of that circle. And as John finishes making the symbol in his blood, he says, lie down, Chaz, and whatever you do, don't look.
And Chaz asks, well, what'll happen?
And John answers, a soul storm. And that is exactly what happens, because as we turn the page, we get a double page spread where we see the facility in the middle of the countryside, and above it, we see the faces of hundreds of anguished souls screaming and yelling out in pain, hovering in a very large ball above this facility. And it seems that John has made some sort of vortex that a lot of the spirits of those who have not been used in the trials yet into this facility to attack or kill the people that are hurting their bodies. So we cut to the inside of the building in John and Chaz's cell, where that doorway has formed, and we see souls are pouring through, and they begin bursting through the walls of the facility. And the souls are saying, release, rage, revenge, revenge. And we're seeing the reactions from the guards and stuff as they see these spirits. We see their eyes get very wide, and it's almost like they're staring at an angel or something super holy, because their face is covered with light and their eyes are completely washed out almost. It's kind of like the scene in Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark when they open the Ark at the end and it's super bright and people are seeing these spirits, but it's probably not going to end happy. And we see in the last panel that says revenge, Dr. Amos is sitting in his chair in his office looking at some papers. But then he gets all scared as the spirits burst in and they begin to surround him. And we're not actually seeing the spirits in this. We're seeing his reaction in his face. And then in his eyes, we can see a bunch of hands going to grab him. And as they do, he says, oh my God, it's you. And then we turn the page and we see what he's seeing finally. And what he's viewing is just the angelic kind of spiritual bodies of either the people that he has killed already, or maybe the people that were already killed before their spirits go into that meltdown phase. And the spirits are smiling, but they are smiling in a way that makes it seem like they're about to rip him to pieces. So Dr. Amos points at them and says, I was wrong. I thought you were just meat, and I was wrong. You're so perfect, and I've hurt you. I didn't know I was causing so much pain. And then the spirits do a weird thing, and they kind of turn from him and begin to fly away. And he says, don't go. Please don't go. Please. And then it seems like one of the spirits hears him and turns around, and it reaches out his hand to Dr. Amos. And Dr. Amos begins to cry and says, thank you. Then we cut back to John and Chaz in the cell, and that circle on the wall is smoking, and there's a burn mark scorched into the brick. And as Chaz stares at this burn mark, he's hyperventilating, and he says, holy shit. And John, who's cool as a cucumber, says, I suppose you could put it like that. Then he pulls out a cigarette and begins to light it, and Chaz asks, was that them? The souls? And John answers, yeah, they're free now. They can go wherever they're supposed to. And then Chaz looks at John with a side eye and says, and Uncle Tom? And hearing this, John kind of closes his eyes in sadness and maybe regret. And he says, him too. Chaz. And as John looks up to apologize to Chaz, Chaz cuts him off saying, that's all I wanted to know. Because he's still pissed about John lying to him about where his uncle went in the first place. So Chaz walks through a giant hole that has been blown in the wall by the spirits. And he sees a guard immediately in the hall, but he doesn't really care. He just walks up to him. But the guard is in complete shock at what he has just seen with the spirits going through the halls. So Chaz is able to walk up to this guard without any movement from him, and he just takes the gun out of the guard's hands. And John is following Chaz, but he's giving him a bunch of space because obviously Chaz is mad. And he's walking by a bunch of people that are basically just statues. They're just standing there as if they've been frozen in fear or terror. And then he walks by an office, and the scientist in this one isn't frozen. And it's the one that we saw kind of question some of the experiments that were going on with Dr. Amos. And it seems like maybe that was why the spirits let him live, or at least not freeze him in terror. And this doctor is saying, he liked it. I wondered why he did it, you know, the same tests over and over, the dum-dum trials where we knew what would happen, and he made us do it. He just loved seeing it, loved seeing bodies shot to pieces,
butchering them like they were just animals.
And the scientist is not saying this to John. He's just saying it out loud like he's talking to himself. But John replies to what the man said anyway, and he gives kind of like a weird joke where he says, "Ah, well, it might have been worse. He might have been shagging them. That'd be disgusting." And then John just walks out of the room. Then we cut to Chaz, who is arriving at the door of the director of the facility, Dr. Amos. And Chaz still has this huge rifle in his hands, and it looks like he's meaning to use it on this doctor. So as Chaz approaches the door, he hears some talking as Dr. Amos is saying behind the door, "Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so very much." And I assume he is talking to the spirit that reached his hand out to him earlier. So Chaz just lets himself into the room, and as he does, he sees that Dr. Amos has shoved his own hands into his eyeballs. But he's not crying out in pain. He's actually got a big smile on his face. And even though blood is pouring from his eye sockets, like I said, he's saying, "Thank you so very much." So Chaz walks up to Dr. Amos and takes aim at point blank range at Dr. Amos's head. And he pulls the trigger. And all he hears is a click because there are apparently no bullets in the gun. So then Chaz says, "Ah, sod it." And then he takes the rifle by the barrel and he proceeds to beat Dr. Amos to death. And the whole time, Dr. Amos is still saying, "Thank you. Thank you, all of you. Thank you." And Chaz is hitting him so hard that the stock and the butt of the gun are completely shattered and broken by the end of his attack. And then Chaz just stares at the dead body with a face that looks like it's got a little bit of pain and sorrow because this man took his uncle's body and made it so his uncle's soul would not go to heaven, but at least he was able to get revenge for his uncle. Then we cut to John, who's been waiting outside, and he's leaning against one of the brick walls of the facility, and you see Chaz in the background walking out, and John has his back to Chaz, so he doesn't see him coming, and he's thinking to himself, "Don't ask me why, Chaz. I didn't know your uncle was here when I told you he was in a better place. I didn't know he was strung up on the walls of eternity. I swear. Chaz, don't blame me and don't ask me why. Please." So it seems like John is dreading the drive back, probably, where he's anticipating Chaz still being angry and maybe there even being a falling out between them over this. But as Chaz rounds the corner that John is leaning on, he looks at him and they just kind of look at each other for a second. And then Chaz asks, "You got a fag?" So it seems like Chaz has at least temporarily put aside what John did and is just willing to at least drive home with John, if not just bury the hatchet altogether. And that is the end of the issue. So if you guys have any comments, questions, or suggestions, you can email me at planes, trains, and comic books, all one word, at gmail.com. And we will see you on the next one.